This is Dharma Espresso today, my dear friends. I want to translate what I say in Vietnamese, and this is roughly the translation here. About 20 years ago, I loved the show called Crocodile Hunter, and probably you know Steve Irwin, one of my heroes. I love him. I love watching his show, how he went out into the wild and hunted crocodiles, and how he deal with the exotic animal, especially with the snakes and all that. Lovely, lovely. And the first impression when I watch his show is this, I didn't realize how he can praise this venomous snakes. For me, it's so dangerous, it's so ugly, something that I want to be far away from. But for him, he can touch them, he can hold them close, and he say, oh, this is a beautiful snake, look at this, it's beautiful. And I always amazed, how could you see that? How could you think that way? That's about 20 years ago. Recently, I also went to the YouTube and I saw the segment by Chandler's Wise Life. Now, this is a young man, this is a very interesting guy. He's from USA. He had a show that he went to Thailand and he rescued 10 snakes. You can watch it on YouTube. But let me summarize this, why it's so strikingly impressive. He opened up this segment by saying that he himself was a snake handler. Actually, he had a whole bunch of pet snakes in his home. He went to Thailand and he went to a place and he saw that, he found that this is the place, the man, he hold 10 king cobra snakes in his backyard. And it is cement with the chain link fence. So the snakes, all the 10 cobra snakes there, they were sick. They didn't have enough food. The scale is peeling off the body. Some of them get stuck in the wire mesh, so that's why their face was damaged. So in other words, these 10 snakes suffer. I was so amazed because Chandler, he said that, look, this is like my children, and I saw one of them get sick, and I felt so sorry for that one. Well, what he said was so interesting, because I never see or hear anyone saying something like that. So I decided to watch the whole show. But at the end of these shows, it gave me a sense that both Steve Irwin and Chandler, and many more in the YouTube, they don't see the way we see snakes. They see snakes as pet. They see snakes like any regular animal. They're not harmful, they're not bite us unless we do something to them, unless we want to kill them. And many of the people, both Steve and Chandler, always agree that if you see a snake, don't try to do anything, don't try to harm it. Stay still, stand still, breathe very gently, and do not move. Stand still, do not move, do not do anything, and let the snake crawl past you. Don't pay attention. So it's a kind of meditation. It's unmoving, or we call this meditation in stillness. We become very still and we don't want to do anything, and we don't want to giving a thought of killing or fighting with the snakes. Don't give off any sense that you are very angry and you are very unhappy, that you want to be very aggressive, you want to fight, you want to kill. No, don't send any of that thoughts out. Now, this is the kind of thing that I was so interested in, because I realized that, oh, that's a meditation. That's the way we deal with danger, or potential danger. That's how we deal with a snake. We cannot handling the snake, we cannot touch it, but at least we don't want to harm the snake, and we don't want to evoke its anger either. Stay still. And I remember back many, many years ago when I was in Vietnam, my former teacher, he told a story. He said that there's a time that he was meditating and a snake was crawling past and crawling over his body, his thighs, his crossed leg. And he was so scared, but he decided he's not going to move his hands, body. He said he had the cold sweat, but he did not give rise even one single thought or single movement, make any move. These snakes slowly, slowly just pass by. He remembered and he said, that's how we deal with snakes, just to stay unmoving. It's like meditation, we sit still, unmoving. And we face this very deep fear. Fear of being bitten, fear of this very ugly and poisonous snakes is right there with us. But think about this. In the evening, if you walk out in the evening in the garden, especially you walk out in the garden in California here, well, maybe a snake somewhere in the garden. Especially in Anaheim, there may be snakes. They may be rattlesnakes. It could jump out and bite you. So you better turn the lights on. You better have a stick with you or something. But you see, that is the thought full of fears. And talking about fears, we have all kinds of fears. The Buddha's talking about the fears in the sutra itself. And said about, we fear of death, fear of old age, fear of sickness, fear of suffering, fear that no one will be near us or next to us, fear to be alone or lonely, fear to have a bad reputation, bad names, fear of failure, fear of jobless, fear of unrequited love, fear of lost our way, fear of losing position and power, or fear of simply fear of loss, losing our possessions, fear of loss. There's many kind of fears, but you know that the oldest fear is not from outside, it was inside, they're already within us. The moment we have the body, and the moment we have identity, the moment we have a self, we have fear. Fear is always with us, in us, not outside. But everything outside is triggering that fear. The snake is the animal, the image of that trigger our deepest fear. But doesn't mean that the snake, every time the snake comes, it bites us. No, it doesn't bite us that way. And you ask me, hey, do you have ever seen any snake? Yes, I do see. The moment I saw the snake, I remember that's maybe about 10 feet from me. I saw the snake just walking by and I'm so fearful. I ran and I forgot about anyone. I don't care about anyone, I just ran. But you can see that fear, but the snake itself, is slowly it moves away and it doesn't care about me, it doesn't think about me, it doesn't want to bite me at all. But I was scared of it. It is the inner state. It is simply the fear within me and the snake that triggered that fear. And all the story I have heard since I was young, weaving and embedded in my brain, and the fear is totally rigged with my hypothalamus, and the image of that fear is in my brain, ingrained and embedded, it is there. But actually, the snake, like any animal, it doesn't bite us if we have no reason to do anything with that. Now, of course, you can argue, say, okay, the certain kind of snake, they are very aggressive, they bite. Yeah, sure, but they're not here. They're not in California, they're not in Canada, they're not somewhere nearby, all right? Some of them may be somewhere in Africa, very aggressive, and they're not many, they're not there. We live in the city, we're not going to worry about that. But anyhow, you see how powerful the triggering process is. It triggers our fear. And thinking about the example that we walk in the dark and in our head, we have the image of a snake will come out any moment and bite us. We fearful of invisible beings there. There's no snake out there, but the head has this fear. Now let's think of one moment back. The coronavirus is invisible as well. It is invisible. But the fear within us, we fear because we see the number of death rising, we see the number of people get infected, we hear the misinformation on the media, people talking about all kinds of things about how fearful, and then we hear the people who's coming out talking with anger, or they're talking about, you know, we don't have this enough mask, we don't have enough this and that, we are really doomed. All of this talk trigger our fear, our survival ability. trigger this fear, and none of them have happened right now yet, but we have fear. Now, let's take a moment. When you see the snake, then what do? Stand still, cultivate stillness, unmoving, breathe very gently, deeply, and you can smile. You can lock eye with the snake, but you don't want to do anything, right? Unmoving. Because you unmove, then you are meditating. Same thing with the coronavirus, with this pandemic. How do we deal with it? The government, US government, I think Canadian government as well, and the Japanese government as well, and governments anywhere, everywhere, maybe they do the same thing. They said very simple thing. You got to stay at home. Don't go anywhere. And if you go near to someone, have maybe 6 feet apart from that person, you keep a distance. And if you have a mild symptom, quarantine yourself. Stay at home, isolate yourself. Don't get out and go anywhere. Don't go to the big crowd and don't go to the nightclub and even go to the park. Don't try to stay together 4, 5, 6 people as a group. No. You go to the park, walk the park, but keep the distance. But basically, stay at home. You stay at home. Now you're thinking about a little bit about that. Stay at home. It's a form of meditation, is a form of stillness, cultivating stillness. But in the most superficial level, the body doesn't leave the house. The body stay in the house. The body stay in one place. Whatever your mind moving, doesn't matter. That's not important. But the body doesn't move around. So you don't have any trigger, any fear from seeing a meeting or interacting with the people who have the virus themselves. So the order is you stay, the body stay at home. Now this is the most superficial form of meditation, which is a form of meditation. It's a good one, it's not a bad one. It's a remedy for fear. It's not fear itself, it's a remedy for fear. Stay at home, the body stay in the house. Now, our meditation, our Buddhist meditation is teaching us how the mind stay in the body. Because a lot of time our mind moving out of the body, out of desire, we go after power, after fame, after name, we go after food, the mind go everywhere. The mind doesn't stay in the body. The mind now, if you remember, I just said a few minutes ago, when you see the snake, stand still, breathe, cooling yourself down. You know, that means the mind stay in the body. And that's a form of meditation. So we have the first level is the body stay in the house. That's the first level of meditation. It's very important. It's superficial, but it's very important because it can heal the sickness, that heal the transmission of the virus. That's the first one. And then you have the second level of meditation. The mind stay in the body. The second level of meditation. So you have to somehow sit down, close your eye, do the breathing, get your mind, stay in the body. The mind doesn't go out looking at anywhere. And then they have a third level of meditation where the emotions stay in the mind. Because some emotion, you think about the past, somebody hurts you, you think about someone did something wrong in the past, and you keep running to the past. And your emotion pouring into the past, your emotion pouring into all directions. Your emotion now going from anger, from anxiety, from sadness, from wanting this, wanting that, from unfulfilling emotion into all kind of thing. But the emotion doesn't stay in the mind. The emotion pouring out into all kind of sceneries, mental scenery, all kind of things, and it translate into all kind of reaching out from getting this, getting that, buying this, got that position, and suddenly you realize that your emotion running your life. You don't have any control over your life. So the third meditation is keep the emotion inside the mind. Don't let the emotion running out and externalize into the pursuit for fame, for name, for power, for gratification, for anything. Now the fourth level of the mind, of meditation, is keep the wisdom inside the mental construct. The mental construct including our thinking, our feelings, all that. We have to keep that wisdom. Don't let the wisdom shining somewhere else. The wisdom has to look at all the emotion, look at our attachment, look at our blind spot. That's how the wisdom should do. And it look at the mental construct. The wisdom should not go to sleep. If you don't have anything to do with wisdom, wisdom can go out of the mental construct. The wisdom can do something else, it simply go to sleep. It doesn't stay in the mental construct. Mental construct, it was constructed by the ego. So the wisdom had to look at what the ego is doing. And finally, the deepest meditation is keep the light, our inner light, shining the darkness. Meaning our true mind, the light of the true mind, shining all the dark corners, the darkness of our existence. That's the deepest level. But don't let the light go out. You got to keep the light shining in the dark of our attachment, the dark of our ego, the dark of our desires, the dark of the duality, the attachment to duality. You see, in other words, meditation has many levels. And right now, as we face the pandemic, the first level of meditation had to be done faithfully, successfully, beautifully. And that we stay home, we enjoy our home, do some gardening, go and have some sun, learn some cooking, learn something that to beautify our house, something that we show that we care for the house. Yesterday I offered to cook hot water, but my staff denied me. Said, no, Thay, you don't need to cook hot water. We done that. So I'm sitting and say, okay, so how about I sweep the floor a little bit here and there? Well, I did that. Or how about I'm going out and maybe do something happening with Chi Ngoc, who is cleaning, you know, the garden. Yeah, maybe I should do that. I'll clean the car. Or do something, but to beautify our environment. Oh, that's something we can do. So, in other words, we should focus on the first layer of the meditation. Put the body in the house. Alright, so that is roughly the translation for my Vietnamese Dharma Espresso. So you don't need to translate that into English. You can just listen to my Dharma Espresso here. And I wish you a wonderful day. Here now in California, Southern California, it's really sunny, shining, and it's wonderful. So thank you for listening, and I will talk to you soon.